Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
2023 is finally here. Last year, we started the year off with Ron Klasko with New Year, New Agenda. This year, I don't think we're going to have New Year, New Agenda, more like New Year, New Frustrations. What do you think, Rebecca?
Well, as I told you, Mona, yeah, coming into 2023, my favorite emoji has been hitting my head against the wall. Look, we're not trying to make the episode one that's pessimist. We have seen some good things coming through in 2022. We got RIA, regional centers are back in business. But coming in towards the end of 2022, we have seen a bit of frustration with these forms.
A bit? Oh my goodness. All right. So if anybody wants to have a quick catch up on what is going on and what we should expect?
Yeah, let's dive into it. Let's start with the forms. What's going on with the forms that have you frustrated so much?
Well, going into December, I think the entire EB5 community in 2022 was, we had conversations about regional center redesignation versus designation and compliance, which all had to be done by December 29th.
I killed our December, I can tell you. It's not that we don't do compliance every year. I mean, for the last 5, 6, 7 years, whenever the forms first came out, we've been doing compliance. And we've been having the same frustrations with regional centers who leave everything to the last minute. But this year was different.
Yeah, this year we had a different form. So first we had to wrap our heads around a new form. So instead of the I-924A, we're dealing with the I-956G. And on top of that, Mona, where I think a lot of confusion for us, or we needed more clarity, was the regional centers that had filed and were already designated under the old laws. What were we supposed to do coming in and redesignating under the I-956G?
It was a real headache. And I can tell you that as there was no guidance from USCIS, we had all the BP5 attorneys who actually do compliance. Everybody had a different viewpoint as to how we should be doing this. And there were blog posts flying out and it was crazy madness. And literally for the amount of information that has to be put onto that form, we were like, how can USCIS only give us this amount of time? It's going to take us weeks. We did so many late nights. It was crazy. And then the day before Christmas Eve, what happened?
Well, they did announce that they were going to extend. So us as attorneys thought USCIS was taking pity on us, thought we could enjoy our holidays.
You get to go home and take an extra lump of coal, exactly. Huh?
Well, I actually have to say, it was like, but why did you take so long?
I know. I could have enjoyed a few more days, but it was nice to have the 2 weeks to think that we didn't have to rush these cases out. But then, Mono, coming into 2023, the first day back in the office, what did we get?
Oh, yeah, it was not pity on us at all because they wanted to have a major fee hike. And these forms are part of that fee hike.
Yeah, so it made us think that maybe they decided to extend the deadline for the compliance and redesignation so that they can charge these extra fees, because there has been no date set yet either since December 23rd on when these forms will be due.
So, Mark, you're going to hear a lot about this year. Although, quite honestly, the hike in filing fees was on the agenda for some time as far as Congress was concerned, but nobody expected the kind of fee hike which was proposed.
Yeah, especially in, I mean, I understand we're in EB5, but these were a bit outrageous.
Just to be clear, they're proposed right now. Correct.
Yes,
so there's
yes.
going to be some time frame, but it looks like it's definitely happening. But when are these going to go into effect?
Oh, we don't know yet because there is a notice period and there was a 60-day comment period. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that newspapers in different parts of the world were playing as if this was happening. And mm-hmm. the consequence of that was that clients that we're working with all came rushing to us and said, file my case before the fee hike. And
well, I could see that. In fact, let's get into it. What's the sticker shock? It's a significant increase, right?
Oh, yeah. So when we first started doing I-526s, it was, what was it, Rebecca? 1,500?
Yeah.
Then it jumped. Then it jumped a few years ago to 3,675. And now the proposed new fee is
11,160.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So from 3,000-ish to 11,000-ish.
Yeah. For the mathematics, for the mathematicians, it's a 204% jump.
Yes. So investors, you're going to see a tremendous increase in the I-526 filing fees. But I think, Mona, the one that I think was a stickler for everyone was the fee increase for the I-956 and the I-956F.
Yes. Yeah.
Taking it to the regional centers. Huh?
Right. So the 956F. And so originally when I first started, Mark, there was no fee to be paid for putting a new regional center up. Then they brought in the early fee. And that was, I think, was 6,000 or 6,000 or 7,000. Then it got hiked up. That was another time when we had a lot of filings. Back in 2017, it was hiked up to 17,795, which is, you know, it's silly. Just say 18,000, you know. It's USCIS. Why are you doing all of these silly figures? I don't get it. You know, it makes life so difficult.
I wonder how many government employees it takes to calculate what these fees should be down to the dollar or in penny amount. But it's just rounding and say, let's go.
Oh, wait. You didn't hear the good part of this. 17,795 is what the current fee is for anybody who wants to put a regional center up, or they're making a change, or something of that nature. Just wait for it. The proposed new fee is 47,695. 48,000.
So almost 50 grand. So somebody who wants to help investors, as well as American jobs, now they're getting hit with a $50,000 bill.
Yeah. Well, that's not the only fee. There's more. Rebecca,
else? In addition to all these fees, and mind you, remember, you're filing the I-956 to redesignate your regional center. You're filing...
She remembers the form's names. So
you're
never
filing the I-956G for compliance, which that's not as much. You're filing the I-956F now as well. So you're looking at two $50,000 fees in addition to the integrity fund fee, which is another $20,000, depending on if you have, 20 or more investors in your regional center, or $10,000 if it's less.
Yeah, but if I was an investor listening to this show, I would be saying, well, I don't care. That's the regional center. And quite frankly, we need all of these fees there so that everything is run so much more efficiently, because I'm tired of hearing that USCIS isn't doing its job properly because they don't have money. So we thought we would dissect this a little and see how really is this affecting everyone.
Yeah. So,
well, first off, let me guess, with all this money, that means the regional center can claim a job creation in USCIS.
Well,
or else they all have a new wardrobe.
Yeah. No, but it is. It's you know, they keep increasing the fees, and we haven't seen, for us on our end on EB5, we haven't seen faster adjudication times.
Yeah.
So with the 200%+ increase in fees, we're not getting half the processing times?
We don't know. Well, technically, under the new law, they are supposed to reduce the processing times down to under a year, 200 and something days. So we have yet to see that. But we did throw out a blog post. Mm-hmm. And when Rebecca was editing and putting her part in the blog post, she immediately put down these questions.
There are so many questions, I think. It's almost to the fact that, where are these fees being paid for? How did USCIS come up with these fees, right? You can't just come up with a number without telling us where they got these fees. And then going back to those regional centers that have already been designated, it's a bit unfair for them to have to pay this amount of fees. Like, there are some regional centers that already paid the $18,000 to get designated. Now you're having to pay another $50,000 to get redesignated. And then on top of that, am I supposed to pay a $50,000 fee for just a small change to the regional center? Let's say, for instance, you have to change the name or the ownership structure. There's just so many unanswered questions. And I think USCIS did see this and why they've extended the deadline for the forms, but these will all need to get clarified.
Yeah, and they're trying to do this the right way, finally, by giving us this notice and comment period. They had a listening session, which I don't know why they bother. They just listen to all of us complaining and then ignore all of the complaints. It happens every time. But it was humbling when that listening session was on, because it brought out other areas and attorneys from other areas. And we realized, you know, we often get very self-centered that it's all about EB5 and look how much we're paying. But no, there are other areas where really they cannot afford. But the hike for EB5 really is too much.
Well, I think the argument there, Mona, was that we EB5 industry, from the investors to developers to the regional center, are paying such high fees, but we're not seeing the adjudication from our end, right? Most of these adjudicators are being used for other parts of immigration, but it's a very small percentage that's adjudicating EB5 petitions.
Right. It looks like we have to lobby. And then the other thing which we really wanted to figure out is really who is, let's say these fees go into effect and we can't bring them down, you know, for argument's sake, who is then affected? Because the investor doesn't seem to be affected, because it's the developer who pays it. Is that actually true?
I know we were having this conversation earlier. One, investors also have to understand they are getting an increase in the form fees. So they will be paying that $11,160 versus $3,675. But at the same time, these could also get into where the regional center could maybe hike up the admin fees to pay for these additional costs. So
absolutely. I see that. I see that the days of low admin fees are gone. I think regional centers have to charge an admin fee. I also think, unless the agents take a cut, and I can't see that happening, but it is going to affect the agents
for
sure.
Yes, I see that happening as well, especially, and we're going to get into this, I know, some more, but especially with the I-956K. Where agents now have to put every agent into the PPM, or who's getting paid what?
I told you she remembered all the numbers.
Wow.
I don't know how.
The agents.
Yeah. We will go into that, because we actually did chat about that in one of our earlier podcasts, but there's been more developments. Yeah. The K forms, do the K forms have a fee, Rebecca?
No. So they do not have a fee. They will go along with the I-956F.
I'm shocked. USCIS actually missed an opportunity to make some money?
You know, we're going into all of this, but at the same time, you know, we're talking about fee increases. We're hoping that USCIS comes back with faster adjudication times. But if we cure the backlog, is this going to help with new visas coming out? They're still going to have backlogs.
Yeah, well, it's going to be at least, if it does clear the backlog, we're hit right now with these crazy backlogs and processing times. I mean, what, 3 years people have been waiting, 4 years? And I know we've been through a lot. We've been through COVID, and we're getting an idea of how archaic USCIS is running through the AAO system, which we'll get to in a second. But USCIS needs to just move into 2023. I think so many of their issues would be resolved if they did that. But hopefully somebody with some intelligence might be hired now and start bringing all of those procedures
in. I will admit, coming in with the I-956F form, I think that helps in a way that you're sending one set of project documents and you just have to file that receipt notice with all the investor applications moving forward. That helps.
You know my opinion. I don't even think USCIS should be looking at projects. It should be Department of Commerce or someone else, because the frustration that we get when USCIS do not understand projects, and I have been saying this for forever.
Yes. And hopefully that will be another topic in 2023 that we'll bring out later. But I think with the whole online filings, maybe that will come in, but we have yet to see.
Well, they're going to need a lot more adjudicators with all of these forms. It's not just these regional center forms, which are so detailed now. The investor form is so detailed.
Yes, actually, we were having discussions on that. Look, we have two forms now on the investor sides, the I-956, which are for direct projects only. And then we have the I-956E, which is for regional center investors. There is some discussions going on with those forms, because the attorneys are discussing that the I-526, the cost to do that should be a bit more, or should stay the same. And those for the I-526E should be less, because you're already filing the project documentation with the I-956F. So if you
That's a good point. I didn't think of that before. So they're basically double dipping.
Yeah, exactly. You're charging double the amount to review project documents. So I know that has been an issue that was brought up. I think that would be something for USCIS to look at when they're looking into these fee increases. But we're also looking at fee increases in the I-829 petition. And again, that's the investors are responsible for paying those fees. So it's increasing from $3,750 to $9,525.
Yeah, that's a double. That's more than double.
Yeah, yeah. So, and again, that's per investor. And they're, again, reviewing the same project documentation. For the investor point of view, really all you're looking at is to make sure they have been in compliance, right? Paid their taxes, have been pretty much a model citizen, whereas you're really looking at the project documents. So for each investor to have to pay that, that's quite a lot.
I know, but it's very sad to think that one of the richest countries in the world, their immigration staff, which is a government body, is basically saying we're cash poor, understaffed, and need money from you to just be able to prevent us from not doing our job in a timely and efficient manner. And moreover, look at all the money they've already taken for cases that they have not adjudicated. If this was the private sector, Rebecca, this would be considered fraud.
I mean, I think we did some calculations and it is millions and millions of dollars just from these fees. And imagine when these are increased, how much more USCIS is getting for this.
Yeah, unfortunately, they cherry picked easier cases and then left the harder cases when they had no money and no staff and no competent staff.
Exactly. And that's why they're in a mess today, because now you're asking for a fee increase. This fee increase is technically for the new cases that are being filed. So what? You're going to adjudicate these cases faster than the ones that are actually still stuck? So they need to really figure that out.
Yeah, well, stay tuned. That's all I can say. But what else?
We could
wax lyrical on this for much longer. Yeah.
Well, here's one. Here's a good one. USCIS just came out again. As we all knew, in 2021, during the Christmas holidays, we again had a ton of I-829 receipt notices coming to us because they, you know, it's good for the clients or for the investors, because instead of having to go every year to renew your I-551 stamp for your I-829 petition, they've increased it to 2 years. So now you have 2 years extended onto your conditional green.
But there's a but.
So, I mean, again, it's good for the investors because now they've increased that from 24 months to 48 months. So that's 4 years that you don't have to go get an InfoPass appointment. However, it makes me think, are they technically going backwards, or instead of the forward motion that we're supposed to be going and having faster adjudication? It makes me think that, are they really planning on having 4, 5, 6 year waiting periods for I-829 petitions?
No, I hope not. But I can say that the poor investors who have got I-829 petitions, and I've brought this up to USCIS in one of their meetings before, they are having a very tough time coming in. At so many ports of entry and overseas, they're not being recognized. And their officers are saying, well, what is this? We don't receive this stamp, or there's some issue or another.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an issue to call and create an InfoPass appointment. I mean, they tell us you can't call 30 days in advance, then more than 30 days in advance. You call 30 days, they are like, oh, you're calling too early again. You call, and then by the time you actually get an appointment, it's after your I-551 stamp, the date on there. So it's a lot of headache for investors and clients to have to continually renew this when they need to travel. They have a life as well. They need to be able to travel and work without having to continually get this done.
Yeah, it is archaic. The system is archaic. And we are seeing something new, which, well, it is new to us, because under RIA, we are now forced for any denials to go through the AAO. And we didn't used to have to do this. We could just jump straight to federal court. And now that we are seeing adjudications, we're also seeing USCIS making some really silly and ignorant type of statements on denials and denying cases, denying projects. Just not looking at the documentation properly, asking, well, this is not there, but then did you read the documentation? So unfortunately, our frustrations this year, as I said, it's going to be new year, new frustrations, are increasing tenfold by having to be forced to go to the AAO, which is the Administrative Appeals Unit. And it's an office which is run by USCIS.
Yeah, and from our point of view, Mona, for like what you were saying before, that it shouldn't be, especially these project documents shouldn't be looked at by USCIS. The complexity of these cases should be looked at from the Chamber of Commerce, like as we were talking about before.
Yeah, clearly they do not have the capacity for such complicated cases. Their whole methodology is archaic. Even getting a brief to them in a manner which would give the investor a chance at getting his case through is just
Oh,
archaic.
God. Yeah. Because so here's the problem. And this is a good point you brought out to me, Mona, that we had discussions on the fact that AA's used to one immigration case. You have, maybe you have an I-130 case, or you have an H-1B, or it's, there's cases like that. It's one investor or one client that you have to worry about. What we're there not understanding is that now we're dealing with projects with multiple investors. And where we're seeing the issues is that they're not giving us time to be able to read each investor's denial, right? You're getting five or six denials with the same deadline. Some of them are requesting different information from the same project.
Yeah, I don't think they care. They really don't. Again, I think we are going to have to focus a lot on lobbying to try and put EB-5 in a different category. And I see that is something which is going to definitely be there in 2023. And hey, don't forget, next year we have elections. So the lobbying is, there's going to be an uptick for sure.
Yeah, but where do we see that going, Mona, in EB5?
I see the lobbying being pushed because at the end of the day now, what else, how else do we move our case forward? And very frankly, I think EB-5 has probably got the most organized lobbying in comparison to many of the other areas in
Yeah,
immigration.
we have our friends at IAUSA. They have been pushing, and I think we're even getting, we're seeing more and more on the Hill.
Yeah. And we have EB-5 industry friendly folk as well, because the leader of the House now is Hakeem Jeffries. And if you recall, we did an event for Hakeem Jeffries some a couple of
Yes.
years ago, a few years ago. He's very much on board with EB-5, as is Chuck Schumer, and quite frankly, many of the Republicans as well.
So with we're going to have lobbying, but what about, do we see more litigation coming in?
Oh, I believe EB-5 and the word litigation are synonymous. They go hand in hand. Litigation, yes. All signs point to litigation being tripled. In fact, I think we should just pack in and just become litigation lawyers, Rebecca. We actually might be better
I
off.
know for 2023. Oh my gosh. It's just from anything, from the fees to the adjudication times to the processing, we're seeing problematic areas everywhere.
And hear this, Mark. This is the most amazing thing. So, in a case where there is a group of people who are fighting for what's called writ of mandamus to try and have their cases adjudicated faster, and this is for an I-829, USCIS actually come out and admit that they've lost the documentation, and it's in an area that they have nobody can even go. It was misplaced in one of their storage, and now when somebody goes back to try and pick out the storage documents, they can't find them. What do you do?
But is this documentation for a particular project or their process on how to do all these projects?
Well, the way the I-829 works, we have to put a lot of project material in there. You remember, EB-5 is very document heavy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And imagine thousands and thousands of pages for each investor, and then all of this is just sitting in a storage facility.
But luckily, you have these online systems where you can just upload hundreds and thousands and just one click, right?
Oh, we wish. They have not got there. They say the wheels of justice turn slowly, but with USCIS, it's.
Extra slow.
They haven't evolved to round wheels yet, right? They're still
Yeah,
using the square
exactly.
wheels. Mona, Rebecca, listen, I got to ask, you're always both so in tune with what's going on. How do you ladies stay current and up to date with all this latest news and this early proposal information?
Good question. Good question, Mark. Well, a lot of it is due to the fact that we meet with other lawyers and other people in the industry. We were just in Miami last week for an industry conference, and a lot of these things did come out. We keep our ear to the ground as far as
Yes.
reading and just making sure that we're always in tune of whatever is going on out there. What do you think
Yeah,
about?
it's a lot is reading because we're talking about one industry, EB5, but there's so many other areas that can affect it. So I think just
Yeah.
being on top of it and listening to everyone. You know, like we said, we talk to other industry experts. We go to these conferences. We even listen to the investors and what they have to say. You know, we could potentially be seeing litigation with investors who filed with pre-RIA to those now being able to, you know, file under these new set-asides. I mean, there's just so much going on. You have to be on top of it.
I mean, we've had Baring Mark 1, Mark 2, and I'm pretty sure this year we might have Baring Mark 3. It seems, unfortunately, the only way for an investor to move forward. We are seeing, and it's going to be very interesting, and we're going to talk about it, but we have the old investors also complaining about the fact that the new investors have been jumped ahead of them.
Yep, so that's where I think we will see. If not, it's, I think...
Another point of litigation.
It's already starting.
Yes. Oh, it's already started. But you know, Mark and Rebecca, I really think that we should pause for a second because, yes, we are frustrated and we see that this year is going to be very frustrating in many angles. But I do see one thing. I see that USCIS is trying to dig itself out of the hole. And as far as EB5 is concerned, it is as popular as ever. It's surprising. Even with a $300,000 increase, there's no shortage of interest. And I do feel there is another issue coming up this year. We are going to hit the recession. And whenever there's a recession, that's when EB5 is very popular.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I do see USCIS working with us a bit more. You know, at least they're trying to listen to what we have to say, and I hope they do take it into consideration. But we are seeing that from the Baring case, and hopefully, like we said, 2023, we can look for some more to come.
Agreed, Rebecca. As well as more to come here on EB5 Investment Voice as we move through 2023.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.